This is VOA News. I'm Tom McNeil. The White House is urging all Americans to avoid crowds and eating out as part of a bid to fight an expected surge of coronavirus cases. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani.
The sweeping guidelines call for older Americans and school kids to stay home and for everybody to avoid groups of more than 10.
If everyone makes this change or these critical changes and sacrifices now, we will rally together as one nation. And we will defeat the virus.
At a White House news conference, President Trump struck his most somber tone yet about the pandemic and when it might subside.
They think August, could be July, could be longer than that.
Far less optimistic than his earlier claims that it would go away within weeks. Shortly before the Dow closed down nearly 3,000 points, the president acknowledged for the first time that the virus may send the economy into a recession. Sagar Magani, Washington.
7 million Californians living in and around San Francisco are being ordered to shelter in place, the most draconian step taken so far to stop the spread of the coronavirus. The order affects six counties in Northern California. All stores and businesses will be shuttered except for essential places like supermarkets, drugstores, and this lockdown is expected to remain in effect through April 7th. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo told Iraqi Prime Minister Abdel Abdul Mahdi Monday that those responsible for a deadly attack on a military base last week must be held accountable. Two American service members and a British medic were killed when Iraqi-based Camp Taji came under a rocket attack last Wednesday. At least 14 others were injured. U.S. retaliatory strikes last Thursday and early Friday hit five weapons depots and the Iranian-backed group Hezbollah in Iraq. This is VOA News. 45 young, healthy volunteers were scheduled Monday to begin taking an experimental coronavirus vaccine at a research facility in Seattle, Washington, one of the U.S. cities hardest hit by the virus so far. The vaccine is being developed by the National Institutes of Health and a private biotech company. Rebecca Searle is one of the first to receive the experimental COVID-19 vaccine.
I really, really hope that it works and it's able to be used publicly and become widely available for everyone. You know, there's obviously a certain amount of nerves associated with it, you know, as any experimental trial is going to be. You know, I hope it works. I hope there's no crazy side effects.
And Neil Browning says he's participating because of his kids.
You know, every parent wants their children to look up to them, and giving them something worthwhile, in my opinion, for them to look up to is important.
Public health officials say it will take a year to 18 months to fully validate a potential vaccine. Russian President Vladimir Putin may be extending his time in office. VOA's Marissa Melton.
Russia's Constitutional Court has approved amendments that, among other changes, would allow Vladimir Putin to run again for president in 2024. The constitutional changes are due to be put to a nationwide vote in April. In January, Putin announced a major shakeup of Russian politics and a constitutional overhaul, which the Kremlin described as a redistribution of power from the presidency to parliament. But last week, Putin appeared in the State Duma to back a new amendment that would allow him to ignore a current constitutional ban on him running again in 4 years' time. Putin is in his fourth presidential term and has been president or prime minister of Russia for the past two decades. Marissa Melton, VOA News.
The International Organization for Migration reports that despite Yemen's brutal civil war, tens of thousands of refugees and migrants across the Gulf of Aden each year into the conflict-ridden country in hopes of reaching Saudi Arabia.
The United Nations considers Yemen the world's worst humanitarian catastrophe. Despite this disastrous situation, migrants from the Horn of Africa remain undeterred in their determination to reach Yemen and then to Saudi Arabia and a hoped for better life. Last year, the International Organization for Migration reports more than 138,000 people crossed the Gulf of Aden to Yemen. It says an agreement last year between Saudi Arabia and Ethiopia that allows 100,000 Ethiopian workers to travel legally to Saudi Arabia for work has been successful, and the agency calls for it to be extended. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
News Tonight on The Voice of America.
Hello, welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us for a special pre-recorded program while VOA headquarters resolves some technical issues. I'm Yehi Suhib, and coming up...
The rights group says 8 journalists have been killed since the administration led by President Mohamed Abdullahi Farmajo came to power 3 years ago. 5 journalists were killed by Al-Shabaab attacks.
That was Mohamed Yusuf reporting on Somali press freedom. Plus, we hear about an effort to save disappearing languages in Cameroon. And South Sudanese students are stranded in Ethiopia. Those stories and more. Next on this special VOA Africa program. In 2019, 2 journalists were killed in Somalia, a low number by Somali standards, but the Somali Journalist Syndicate reports that more than 50 journalists were arrested and 81 were attacked while doing their job. The group defends the rights of the journalists in Horn of Africa nations. The group also says Somali security agencies stopped journalists 15 times as they tried to access government offices and areas. Mohamed Yusuf reports.
The Amnesty International report entitled We Live in Perpetual Fear details harassment, intimidation and killings of journalists by militant group Al-Shabaab, police and various government officials. The threats on Somali journalists have created a climate of fear, says Deprois Mushena, the head of Amnesty International in East and Southern Africa.
This fear is experienced through a range of violations that are physical in nature, which include physical attacks, arbitrary arrests of journalists, killings by both the armed group Al-Shabaab and the government forces, in particular in the one case. And then the disturbing accompanying point and observation we make is that for all these violations, there is actually no concluded investigations that have been done in order for us to say impunity is now being addressed.
The rights group says 8 journalists have been killed since the administration led by President Mohamed Abdullahi Farmajo came to power 3 years ago. 5 journalists were killed by Al-Shabaab attacks, 2 by unknown gunmen, and 1 was murdered by a police officer. Abdullahi Hassan, an Amnesty International Somali researcher, told reporters in Nairobi that journalists were attacked for doing their work.
Most of the times when these physical attacks happened, they happened in a context where journalists were trying to cover what they call sensitive stories. These sensitive stories include reporting on Al-Shabaab attacks, reporting on corruption, reporting on human rights violations, and reporting on issues that are perceived to be critical of the government.
Another 8 Somali journalists have fled the country for fear of their lives. 30-year-old Noor Ismail Sheikh is one of them. His troubles began when he interviewed some opposition groups critical of the Somali government. The reporting led to his arrest. I was detained for 12 days in Mogadishu. I was detained in the criminal investigation police for a few days and later transferred to the central prison without charge. He says, I was later released. After the release, I started receiving threats from different groups. The threats to my life have forced me to flee the country and come to Kenya. Somalia's Minister of Information said in a statement Thursday that it disagrees with the rights group's findings. The statement said the report is politically motivated and is aimed at tainting the image of the Somali government, which it said has taken measures to protect journalists and media houses. Somalia is preparing for local and presidential elections next year. The rights organization says the heated political climate may generate more violence against journalists. It is calling on the Somali government to create an environment for journalists and media organizations to operate to inform and help Somalis to make decisions about their next government. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Uganda's Ministry for Gender and Culture is facing a backlash after equating the cultural practice of labia stretching with female circumcision, known as female genital mutilation, because of the damage caused. The traditional stretching of the female genitals by Bantu-speaking tribes in Uganda, Rwanda, and Zambia is believed to have benefits, including greater sexual pleasure. But the pre-marriage practice is criticized for being forced on young girls. As Halima Atumani reports from Kampala, first, a warning to listeners. This story includes content of a sexual nature and descriptions that some may find disturbing.
Cynthia, who for privacy does not wish to use her real name, was 12 years old when a senior female teacher announced that girls at her school, more than 100, would undergo genital stretching. Under pressure from the girls' parents, the school arranged for older women to instruct the girls on how to stretch their labia and to use traditional herbs to make it permanent.
It was painful. It wasn't really something pleasant for me as a person. Because at that time, you were something like 11 years, you're not sexually active. So why are you doing this thing? Honestly, why are you doing this so-called pulling, whatever people call it? I didn't know why. But because we're many, some days they would say, get a partner. Get a partner, you do it to each other.
Labia stretching is a pre-marriage tradition in southeastern Africa among Bantu-speaking tribes who believe it gives greater sexual pleasure to both men and women. But Uganda's Minister for Culture and Gender, Peace Mutuzo, sparked controversy this month by calling labia stretching a type of female genital mutilation. She says while FGM, that involves cutting or circumcision, does much greater physical damage, labia stretching should not be forced on girls.
Children between 8 to 12 are being sensitized, initiated, and the practice takes effect from that time. These are basically babies who have taken to schools for empowerment, for purposes of full growth, to actualize their potential.
For the last 20 years, Hamida Namatevu has been showing girls and women how to stretch their labia. She defends the cultural practice, claiming, unlike FGM, labia stretching has no negative effects, only positive ones. She says, once you do it and you have a marriage partner, that's the only thing that will show him that you are ready. But doctors dismiss the claims. Dr. Vincent Karhanga says, just like FGM, labia stretching is more about pleasing men than women.
Much as it is claimed that pulling can ease birth pain or even make a woman warmer, there is no scientific evidence in this. But what is true is that pulling can actually make the men involved sexually with the women happier with their sexual act.
Nonetheless, labia stretching practitioners are demanding that Mutuzo apologize for undermining their tradition. But she dismisses their call, saying she will continue to speak for the voiceless and discourage the practice until girls reach the age of consent. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala.
Cameroon is launching a program to save its endangered national languages. The Central African state has over 260 national languages, but only 40 are taught in schools. Cameroonians speak mostly French and English, which are foreign but official languages, and part of an entrenched separatist conflict that has cost about 3,000 lives since 2017. Moki Edward Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
At the multilingual and inclusive government primary school Yaoundé, 150 children between the ages of 5 and 11 years old learn how to count in Ewondo, a Cameroon national language spoken in the country's central and southern regions that comprise two of the Central African state's 10 administrative regions. The students are also taught the national anthem and patriotic songs in Cameroon national languages. Many parents are in the school to see how their children learn to speak in the Ewondo language. 31-year-old businessman Emmanuel Mbom says he is satisfied at the progress made by his 6-year-old son since he is unable to teach his children at home.
In my situation, my wife and I speak two different languages, native languages, so my children try to pick what they can pick.
Mbom says he is confused about which language to teach his children because his language is Sawa, spoken in the littoral and southwest regions of Cameroon, and his wife is from the northwestern town of Nkambe, where the Limbum language is spoken. Cameroon's Secretary of State in the Ministry of Basic Education, Asheri Kilu, says she is satisfied with the level of interest the children display at speaking their national language.
It is very impressive the way the children are taken into learning their languages. And I decided to check how many children are from other regions rather than Yaoundé. And I figured that there were children from all the 10 regions in Cameroon.
Cameroon has 260 national languages spoken by an estimated 25 million people in the 10 regions of the country. It is one of the countries the United Nations Educational, Scientific and Cultural Organization, UNESCO, classifies as a distinctive cultural density on the linguistic map of the world. The Central African State, however, inherited two foreign languages from its French and English colonial masters as official languages, with 80% of the population speaking French and 20% English. Fabien Freeland, Director General of the non-governmental organization Summer Institute of Linguistics, that helps Cameroon in promoting the teaching and learning of its national languages, says the official languages have not been effective tools of communication.
French and English has its limit for impact on development in this country. When there was a cholera outbreak in the far north, it's only when the